Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, do you have an eclectic family? Maybe a family full of people who have helped you along the way in fun and interesting ways? Well, this week, we're going to share a story called Ant Farm, the Ant Farm, which is spelled A-U-N-T. It seems that Jerry Snyder, well, he's had some interesting ants in his lifetime. And then we're going to see some aspects of culture. You know, we see aspects of culture that are headed in the wrong direction these days. I'm going to ask the question, are we failing? And you may be surprised by the answer to that question. And joining me once again for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. Your intro sounded a little different there.
I know. It's hard. That's hard to do when you, when you've done it 250 times.
Yeah. So November 1st rolled in the official name change of Run for God to Upward Running. So let's talk about what that means. Nothing. It's a name change.
We're the same.
So
people.
We're just coming officially under the umbrella of Upward Sports. And we've talked many times before, it's the right thing to do. You may be wondering about the Run for God t-shirt. It's still going to be there. Actually, runforgod.com is still there as of today. Over the next month and a half to 2 months, by the end of the year, we will fully make the integration with the new app, all the new church partners, the coaching that's going on first part of the year. Dean, we had a podcast or a webinar the other night, and we had 100 Upward churches. These are not run for past Run for God churches. We had a 100 Upward churches.
All new prospects for classes.
New prospects for the 5K challenge, the training groups. And if you haven't heard about that, shoot us an email. We have the 5K challenge, which is where this ministry was kind of born and grew through the years. But we've also added the training groups, which we will go over in detail. We're going to have a few more webinars, so shoot us an email. We'll make sure you're on one of those email or webinars. But I've gotten a chance to talk to hundreds of people over the past couple of months about coaching this January or February. Actually, we've moved the date for the nationwide Couch to Marathon, and the first opportunity to do the nationwide 5K challenge, and many other churches are joining us. It's actually going to be the first week of February now. We've had a few delays in the app. Of course, it's technology. That's to be expected. Sure. We're just not going to come to market with anything subpar. So we're going to make sure it's right on target before we release it. So it's pushed us back to a little bit in December, probably, before we launch the app. But things are exciting around here.
Yeah.
Very, very busy. We're working our fingers to the bone, changing everything over and making all the changeover. But it's exciting. It's really exciting, the idea of what's about to happen. I don't think we fully understand it yet, you and I. Upward does. They've done this many times before. But we're just going to have a whole new audience. I'm going to say a whole extension to our family. I'm not even going to say new family, because the Run for God family is still there.
Yeah.
But we're going to have new family members, and we've all got the same goal, and it's to shine the light of Jesus Christ.
That's right.
Through the sport of running. And for Upward, it's promote the discovery of the gospel through sport.
Yeah.
And so our missions line up, everything lines up, and I'm ready for this full-blown launch.
Amen. I can't wait. It's going to be really exciting. For sure. Our post of the week comes from John Sandifer. He posts Romans 5:8 at the beginning and says, "But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." He says, "When I was lost in alcohol, depression, and a destructive lifestyle some years ago, God still loved me. Coming to recognize his love and my worth as his child changed my life. As I hit a 20-mile run during a marathon training block, I stand teary-eyed in awe at just how radical that change has been. God's radical love has led to radical change. I'm so grateful for unending love and undeserved grace. I'm heading toward the Kiawah Island Marathon in December, where I crashed and burned last year, praying for a better run this year and trying to log some significant miles to make that happen. But no matter what, I hope to shine His light as I run in testimony to the transforming power of radical love. A little photo tour of the town of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, which is near Charleston, where he lives, from his run that morning. He says, "I was blessed by such a beautiful day and a great run, even through the struggle of the last couple of miles."
You know, Dean, I love this post because, you know, we've talked about my dad on here before. I think with anybody that has been radically changed and brought out of substance abuse through the love of Christ, it is what he says. It's radical.
Yeah.
It's a radical change. And I've always said, you know, if you don't believe in Christ, look at my dad.
Yeah.
Before encountering Christ and after encountering Christ. It was a different person, a completely different person. And so I know exactly what John's talking about. And from what I understand, John was the same way. Yep. Completely different people.
And if you want to hear John's whole story, podcast number 60 is where John, he was in our studio and we went over this whole story with him, and it's a great, so go back and listen to episode 60 if you're interested in hearing John's story fully.
Yeah, I mean, you hear it when, you know, depending on how you hear people when they're baptizing people, but usually it's, you know, buried with Christ Jesus, raised to a newness of life. And it's a stark contrast. And there's other circumstances where you see this, but for people who encounter Christ while in the throes of substance abuse, whatever that substance is, alcohol, drugs, whatever, it's an eye-opening difference.
Well, looking at the running side of this, you know, whenever you crash and you burn at a race and you try to go back, I've done this before myself. Sure. I go back the next year to try to do better. Mm-hmm. The one thing you can't do, though, and this is just a word of caution, not for John. John seems to be centered really in the right place in this situation, you know, but you can't get uptight about it. What we do is we get wrapped up about, oh, I can't let happen what happened last year. Don't focus on what happened last year. Focus on just execution, enjoying yourself and having a good race, and don't worry about what happened in the past.
Yeah.
And when you start to feel bad, don't go, oh no, here it comes. Don't do that.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing you can do.
Or I think there's different kinds of people. You know, I can't remember if I talked about this on here last week or not. You may say, yeah, you talked about this. But I was listening to an audio book. Yeah, it was The Comfort Crisis.
Yeah.
And the guy talks about once a year you should do something where there's a 50% chance that you're going to fail. And the idea behind that is we need to do things and we need to fail every now and then. You know, I used to make the comment a lot that you never know how far you can go until you've gone too far. You have to – we have to – no, it's something we shouldn't do all the time – but we have to find that wall sometimes, and we have to die at that wall.
That's right.
Sometimes. So if you're one of those people that are wired like that, then by all means, look back at last year, because that
let it fuel you.
That fuels you to do better this year.
And I'm sure that's why he's running this race.
Yeah. But if you're one of those people who get caught up, oh no, here's where I bunked last year, and you get caught up in that cycle, then it's going to bring you down.
Yeah.
Use it as fuel for sure.
It's kind of a fine line there, isn't it?
It is.
And I'm going to talk about some stuff here in Dean's thoughts that go along with this. It's with all this stuff just goes together.
Yeah.
Our run of the week comes from Brooks Walks. I think that's how you say his last name. He's very popular in the Strava group, posts a lot of stuff. He ran a 50K this past weekend. It was called the Womp Romp 50K in Norwell, Massachusetts. He ran 4:49 for a 50K. That's a 9:10 per mile pace, and that was on a trail run. He finished sixth overall. So, well done, Brooks.
For sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could ever run 50K on a trail. I just can't see my
brain
wrapping around
it. That's a lot of roots and rocks and trees in your way.
Man, oh man.
Every one of them seemed to find me somehow,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. I hit one really hard here recently, so I'm a little bit. I did notice he wears a shoe. It's called Speedland. You ever heard of those?
No,
I've never heard of them. It was a nice looking shoe. It looked like it was a really well cushioned. Kind of looked like the Hoka shoe without the rocker.
Yeah.
So much of the rocker effect, right. Like the Hokas have. So all those trail runners, they wear different shoes than us normal people do. I mean that in a good way, Brooks. So we appreciate
it. It is a different breed for sure. Yeah.
And what a great job.
Yeah.
Our trivia question from last week. Humans are uniquely equipped to run long distances. There are a few animals who can outrun us over the long run. Name one of the animals that can outrun us in a long distance race. I asked this question really kind of to open up a discussion because, you know, there's really no answer to this question. There are a number of animals that they say can run better than us over long distances, but this is kind of epitomizes what I found when I started really looking into this. Was that I saw one place that says that didn't mention horses at all, not at all. Like horse, they didn't mention that as being one of the animals that could outrun us over distances. And then I saw another article that said horses are the undisputed king of long distance running. And so I'm like, I don't know which is true. I do know that the record for the fastest 100 miles on a horse is half the time of the best for a person. So
really?
That tells me they're better over the long distance.
So I saw this may be how, you know, internet's listening. Maybe they knew we were going to be talking about this. It's not going to be long before they know what we're thinking before we think it.
Yeah.
So I'll just put that out there. But I saw it was a graphic. It was a video, but it was an infographic, I think is what they call it. So it was an animated video. And it was showing animals, all these different animals and humans in a race.
Yeah.
And it showed all of these animals going out front, you know, and then you don't even see the human. They're out of the back of the screen. And it goes and it goes and things start dropping. You know, cheetah is one of the first things to drop.
Yeah.
You know,
they don't run for
very
long.
And it goes and it goes and it goes. And ultimately, the human wins. I think it was over. I can't remember what the distance was that the human wins, but the last one standing, number two to the human, was the ostrich.
I've heard that. Yeah.
And it's what it says is the endurance and stamina that all flying birds have, you know, to fly.
Yeah, right.
You have to have an incredible. Well, ostriches still have that, they just don't fly.
Yeah.
And so they can
run.
Now they're not fast. I mean, they're not crazy fast. They're faster than us to start with, but they were the last one standing.
That's
so who knows what's right.
Well, and I read something about ostriches, camels, Alaskan sled dogs, you would assume, you know, because they do the Iditarod. Pronged horn antelopes are, for whatever reason, they're in a lot of these lists of animals. So I don't know actually what the truth is as far as what animals, and it probably depends on how you define the distance and what the ultimate goal is of whatever it is you're doing. But I think it's interesting, though, that no matter how you measure it, humans are absolutely, definitely made for being able to run long distances.
Born to Run. I'm pretty sure there's a book called that.
That's right. And it explains all of this in that book. So it's a good one. And they say that the two things that in Born to Run that it talks about being really important to us is the fact that we can sweat. Mm-hmm. Sweating is a big deal because it allows us to cool our bodies better than almost anything else on Earth. And then the fact that we run on two legs. So it makes me wonder if that's part of the reason why ostriches are so good.
It's true, yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I guess you're for each leg, you're taxing the cardiovascular system more, I guess. I'm thinking this out loud. I don't know. Yeah. I would think using if I was running and flailing my arms at the same time, I would be using more energy to do that.
So yeah, you would think
efficiency.
So.
Efficiency. Yeah.
You would think so. Yep. So I don't know what the actual answer is, but I would take anything, you know, that has a reasonable shot or explanation to it. So I do know that we are good at it, and God made us that way, and he made us that way on purpose. Mm-hmm. So we should revel in that and enjoy that.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we are back. And listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you've heard stories from Jerry before, Jerry's stories are great. We love Jerry's stories. Next week's story, I'm just telling you right now, I'm giving you this preview. Next week's story is powerful. You need to be ready for it because it's going to be good.
You've got me wondering now.
I know. Well, it's going to be good. So, and there's so many people out there that have a story. I mean, this person has had a story for a long time, and she's finally sharing it with us, and you're going to love it.
I think I know the story.
I don't think you do.
I don't?
Nope.
I know there's one that's been kicking around submitting a story.
Yeah,
well, it's going to be really powerful.
We'll see. This is a person I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Before we get started, before we go down to the story, we kind of touched on it in the beginning. If you have ever thought about coaching a class, send an email to customer service at runforgod.com. Join one of these next webinars. We've already got a few webinars under our belt that we can send you a recorded version, or you can join us live on the next ones coming up. I don't have the dates for those. It'll be in November sometime. We want you to join us this January or February or March or whenever you want to start your first class. We're going to be starting, I think it's February the 3rd is when we move the date for the Couch to Marathon start date. But you can start anytime you want. But if you are a prior Run for God church coach, you're onboarded for free. And so we want all of our past coaches and new coaches and Upward churches, we want everybody to join us this January or February. And let's start all this together.
Amen. Well, I got an interesting question this week that I had never heard before. And I wanted to discuss it. And the question is, do you ever have problems with depression after a long run?
Wow.
And when you look that up, apparently it's somewhat of a thing. Whether or not it's actually depression or something else, I don't think anybody really knows. But this person who contacted me said her and her husband both have been through this. They have this feeling after they get through with long runs that lasts for days sometimes.
So it's after a long run, race.
Yes, yeah. And I've never experienced anything like that. I've had those days where I'm completely depleted at the end of a long run, and I have a struggle the rest of the day.
But I actually enjoy that.
Well, it depends on how bad it is. But I mean, I've gotten to the point where I can't hardly get up, you know, because I get dizzy when I get up. But that doesn't happen very often, but sometimes it does. But that's not the same. That's not depression. That's just my body reacting in a bad way to what I just did. When I looked it up, I saw some things that said maybe it is the endorphin. You know, you have these endorphins that are released while you run, and then, of course, they stop after you stop running, and maybe that has something to do with it. But that doesn't make any sense to me, because if that were true, we don't have endorphins running through our body all day long.
Right.
So that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I wouldn't think a lack of endorphins would lead to depression.
Right.
Yeah, to your point, we would be depressed all the time.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I think. And so I wonder if some people just – here's my thoughts And I don't know that this is true, and I'm not saying anybody feels this way or doesn't feel this way. Or it makes me wonder if some people mix their physical feeling with their mental feeling. In other words, they allow their physical feeling to really dictate their mental feeling. Mm. And I feel like from my standpoint, I'm really good at completely separating those things out. And maybe it's just because I've run so many miles in my life. But I think for some people, you know, if they're really depleted from a race, it may just be that they just get it, just that physical depleted feeling makes them feel depleted mentally. So I can see that being the case. There's no scientific backing to that. Yeah. There's no reason, but
I think the way I process it, of course, I'm not running huge distances right now. But when I get done with a hard run or a long run, I do feel bad. But I guess what I was saying while ago is I enjoy the feeling of I did something.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can also see the other side of it. If you're prone to equate that with your physical feeling and equating that to your mental feeling, yeah, that could go the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just wired. I do it the opposite. Of course, I kind of do most everything opposite.
Every day.
Yeah, I've never heard that question. I've never heard that described.
Yeah.
I've heard in the days after a race,
people
experiencing that, because it's like you're training, you are getting a constant hit of these endorphins because you're running, and you take a week off and people just feel horrible and kind of depressed. And I've heard that, but not after just a long run.
Yeah, well, you have this purpose that you've been building for exactly. months, and then it happens, and then it's over, and it's like, oh, what now? I can totally see that.
Which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah,
you know,
completely
different. Don't let that become your identity, for
That's
sure.
Right. That's right. Well, does anyone out there have an interesting family? Jerry Snyder decided it would be a good time to tell us about some of his family members this week. In particular, his aunts. Or aunts, if you're of that persuasion to say it that way.
You know what the saying is, don't you?
What's that?
Everybody has crazy in their family.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then it's you.
Then it's you. That's right. That's right. So this one's called The Ant Farm. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, What we have learned from others becomes our own reflection. My mother had 11 brothers and sisters. Some of them I never met. But there were three aunts whose habits made a lasting impression on me. First, let me introduce you to my Aunt Tilly. No matter how many times I told her my name is Jerry, she still called me Joey. If another family member corrected her, it made no difference. Whether she saw me 2 minutes or 2 weeks later, I heard, "Hello, Joey." In speaking to others about me, Joey did this, Joey did that. Years later, I made a discovery that made me feel a whole lot better about Aunt Tilly. In circus lingo, the word Joey means clown. It honors Joseph Grimaldi, a clown who became famous in England many years ago. Clowns make people happy. So, if what I do or say makes you happy, call me Joey. Thank you, Aunt Tilly. And now let's meet Aunt Margaret. She worked at a school for the blind. I was told she entered the classroom before she had a chance to speak, and the class would say, "Good morning, Miss Margaret." They had listened to the sound of her footsteps coming down the hallway. Ever think about what impression you would make if the only way to evaluate you was by the sound of your footsteps? The way you walk, just like the words you say to yourself, set the tone for the day. So why not walk tall, walk proud, and walk confident? Aunt Margaret also had a special way of reminding you that you had to take responsibility for your own behavior. She liked to say, "If you burn a blister on your butt, you'll have to sit on it." Thank you, Aunt Margaret. And now we present Aunt Lucy, the family version of Name That Tune. The legendary American jazz singer Ella Fitzgerald said, "The only thing better than singing is more singing." And Aunt Lucy believed her. She was the last of my mother's family to leave this world for the next. I don't remember a particular tune, only that she was singing something upbeat and cheerful every time I saw her. Not complaining, just singing her way through life. And life for Aunt Lucy was not always easy. But for her, part of the solution to every problem was a song. Apparently, her strategy worked. She lived 103 years. And if I worked for Aunt Lucy, I just might work the rest. If it worked for Aunt Lucy, it just may work for the rest of us. So how about we start the day off tomorrow with a song in the shower, then sing every chance we get during the day. Don't forget to give yourself a standing ovation before saying good night. Thank you, Aunt Lucy. Keep the circus going inside you. Keep it going. Don't take anything too seriously. It'll all work out in the end. That's from David Niven, the actor and novelist.
So do you sing out loud in the car, shower?
I don't anymore. Yeah. I used to.
Really?
Yeah.
Why did you stop?
I don't listen to music that much anymore.
Mm.
I think that really has more to do with it than anything. I used to listen to music. If I was in the car, I was always listening to music. No matter what, I was listening to music all day long. And I just don't. I listen.
That's a good point. I wonder what ratio podcasting and audiobooks and all that has overtaken music nowadays.
Yeah, it's got to be significant.
Yeah. Because you're right. I rarely listen to music anymore.
Yeah. I still do occasionally, but not very much.
Hmm.
So.
Jerry does it again.
Yeah, he does. It still amazes me how God weaves all these things together. You're going to find out here when I talk about Dean's thoughts that this all goes together. It's wonderful. But we all have these influences in our life we appreciate, right? I'll never forget my grandmother who lived down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Actually, Holly Hill, Florida, which is right near Daytona Beach, Florida. After she passed away, I went down to her funeral down there. And they were the priest was talking about her life and going over the way things, and I realized at that point that a lot of the traits that I have came from my grandmother, and I never realized it before.
Yeah.
And that it, a lot of times I think we're being influenced by people, whether we know it or not.
Sure.
And that's why it's so important for us to, the people we hang around, we need to be around all people, but the people we really hang around, they need to be good people.
You become like them.
That's right.
My mom and dad used to say, you are who you hang around.
That's true.
Yeah.
Proverbs 17:22 says, a merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. I just love the way Jerry focuses on laughing and making people laugh and just being a joyful guy. And it really does make a difference. It's really hard to laugh, to frown or be mad at somebody and laugh at the same time. That's really, really difficult to do.
Yeah, so. it's you always hear you can't be depressed and laugh at the same time.
That's right. And here's what the Mayo Clinic said. These are the short-term benefits. It says a good laugh has great short-term effects. It stimulates many organs. Laughter enhances your intake of oxygen-rich air, stimulates your heart, lungs, and muscles, and increases the endorphins that are released by your brain. It activates and relieve your stress response, that's awesome. How many of us talk about stress all the time? Soothing tension. Laughter can also stimulate circulation and add muscle relaxation, both of which can help reduce some of the physical symptoms of stress. And then the long-term effects, laughter isn't just a quick pick-me-up, they say. It's also good for over the long term. So laughter may also improve your immune system. Negative thoughts manifest into chemical reactions that can affect your body by bringing more stress into your system and decreasing your immunity. By contrast, positive thoughts can actually release neuropeptides that help fight stress and potentially more serious illnesses. It can also help relieve pain. It can increase personal satisfaction, and it can improve your mood. I think we all know that one, but those are some pretty big deals. Changing from a negative person to a positive person can literally change your life completely.
Yeah, and there was a word in there that really stuck out to me, stress. I've been watching a lot of these documentaries here lately. I don't know why I'm on a documentary kick, but the more you watch, the more you read, the more you listen – stress is it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And you can't laugh when you're stressed. It's hard to be happy when you're stressed. And it seems like the more we go on in this society, the more things are being plugged into us that just cause stress.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
And we don't, let me say this, and this is going to be controversial. Mm. You don't have to be stressed.
No, you don't.
You're making a choice to be stressed. I get it. You know, people are like, you don't have my life. I get it. But we do choose whether or not how we react to the stress, I guess, is the thing. And so are we going to feel some pressure occasionally? Absolutely, 100%. I feel stressed from time to time, but I honestly do not let stress just consume me like I see a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And so if you're in that road, man, ask God to help
That's
you.
That's a place
that.
I struggle. And I've had to learn through the years. If you really start to look at your life, it's not that you're a stressed person. You have stressing things in your life.
Yeah.
And you need to unplug from those things.
Yeah.
Some of those may be friends. Some of those may be good habits that you've had. There's so many things that it could be. It could be that you're doing a too much good. Yeah. You can be doing so much good that you completely deplete yourself and you're stressed all the time because you're trying to get everything done. You're trying to be all things to all people. And we've got to, gosh, I know we just keep saying this over and over and over, but sometimes you got to do nothing.
Yeah.
And focus on yourself and your relationship with Christ, because when you're doing, you're not focused on your relationship with Christ.
That is true. Totally. James 4:17 says, anyone who knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it sins.
You know, Dean, what sticks out to me about that passage? There's a period right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not or if or here's the exception. When God lays something on your heart, and it's good. Anytime God lays something on your heart, it is good.
Yeah.
For you to do, and you don't do it, you're being disobedient, and therefore you're sinning.
Yeah.
And there is no conjecture after that. It stops, and that's convicting.
Yeah.
Very convicting.
I guess the hardest part about that verse is, what is the good I ought to do? You know what I mean? Because sometimes it's hard to know, is God telling me I need to do that, or is that
Dean? Or is that Dean, yeah.
Right? And so it's really hard sometimes to discern, but that's why we need to spend more time in prayer to really figure that out. But
sometimes testing and tempting looks very close to the same.
That's exactly
But it leads to very different outcomes.
That's right. But if we'll submit our plans to God, He'll alter those plans in a way that He wants us to alter them. And if we're seeking His will and we're not doing what He clearly tells us we need to do, that's what this verse is saying. Mm-hmm. We're being disobedient. Psalm 105:2, sing to Him, sing praises to Him, tell of all His wonderful acts. I love that. You know, and singing looks different to different people. I just mentioned I don't sing much. And frankly, I'm a really poor singer. And so I probably shouldn't sing much. But it's that attitude of singing that's the big deal. It's the smile on your face. I've told this on here before. You know, I remember, and this has happened to me a number of times, where I don't have a smile on my face and somebody says, what's wrong? And the only thing they see is a lack of a smile. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, there's nothing wrong. Maybe I was thinking about something, or there really wasn't anything wrong. But because I wasn't in a good mood from their perception of me at that moment, they thought something was wrong. And that's a good thing to be known for. It's good that people know me and say,
yeah, you are known as the happy-go-lucky runner guy.
Yeah. And so it's good to...
Yeah.
I like to hear somebody say, hey, what's wrong? You know, because that tells me that, well, normally I'm a happy person.
Yeah. So I love to sing. I think I'm good at singing. But nobody that I interact with
agrees with
understands
you.
What good singing sounds like. I mean, it's true. But to hear my kids talk, I sound like Will Ferrell in Elf when he's singing in the the store. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Everybody has that waypoint in their head if you've ever seen
that's,
Elf.
That's right.
By the way, I may or may not have a Christmas decoration up, and it's Halloween right now. So that's, I'm just going to throw that out there for all you early Christmas decorating and haters out there.
That, and you're proud of that, too.
That came up on the social media group. I got called out a week or two ago on the social media group talking about Christmas decorations. So for all you haters, I might have one up right now. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it singing is, it's an overflow of the heart. And so that's a good indication. If you find yourself singing in your car or where it is, it's an outflow of the heart. And that's always a good thing, no matter what the tune of it is.
Yeah. And you know, this is my thoughts. You know, we're called to be ambassadors for Christ. Mm-hmm. We are called to talk to people about our testimony and things like that. What do you think the difference is in how your testimony comes across if you're smiling and happy versus you look miserable?
Right.
I mean, it's not even the same story at that right. point when you do it that way. And so being happy when you tell your story is an important part of your testimony.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if some of the things you went through were dark, you know, if that look on your face says, I'm so thankful I got through that.
Yeah.
It says a lot.
But I know some people, this is what's strange. I know some people who, they always have that look on their face like they want to just rip you from limb to limb.
Yeah.
Like they're angry.
But
when you talk to them, they're completely opposite that. Yeah. Some of the most joyful people, and I'm thinking of one in particular right now, that he's just, I mean, if he were just sitting on a park bench, you would think, that guy's about to go beat somebody up.
Yeah.
But if you go sit down and talk to him, completely, I mean, he lights up.
Yeah.
But it's just his natural countenance, I guess. And
I've seen that,
you know,
too.
I don't know how you square that in this whole conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's one of the most joyful people I know.
That's I love people like that.
Yeah.
People are just, you know, they're different than what you think they are when you look at them.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'll never forget.
It probably doesn't help that I think he's 96 years old now.
Oh, okay.
He's my neighbor.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, he just grumpy. This is one of those old men that you say his name and his whole face lights up.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I'll never forget years ago when I was working in South Georgia, and I communicated a lot with one of the plants up here in North Georgia. And there was this lady who I called all the time to help me with things in our department. And I talked to her, you know, dozens of times. And she had this dainty little cute little voice. And in my mind, mm-hmm. I'm picturing, you know, a 5'1" mm-hmm. blonde girl. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but that's kind of the thing I had in my mind. I come to North Georgia and I finally meet her. She's about 6 feet tall and she's black. I mean, just completely opposite of what the picture in my mind was. I loved her. She was great. And she was always so joyful. Not that I think a joyful person has to look a certain way. Please don't hear that. But it's so funny when somebody is completely different than what you think they're going to be.
It's kind of what's interesting. Holly and I watched that show, The Voice.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of
interesting
about that because sometimes they turn around and it's a guy and they thought it was a girl or, you know, whatever. It's neat to see the judges' facial expressions when they turn around.
Yeah, it is. That's a good one, yeah. A question. Have you ever had a burden become a blessing?
I think I've had a lot of them through the years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, of course, I've talked on here ad nauseum about losing my job at one point and all that goes with that. And that obviously was one of those things that was a burden that became a blessing. But I was trying to think what other things have happened in my life that were really impactful. And I thought back to when I was in high school. I think I was a freshman in high school at the time. And I was riding my bike home from school. And this big guy, he's a football player. He's a real popular guy in school. He was walking with some other people. And he stops me in the middle of the road. Mm-hmm. He puts my front tire of my bike in between his knees, and he just punches me in the face for no reason. Well, the reason was he wanted to get a laugh out of the people he was with because he thought that was funny. Well, obviously, on my end of things, it wasn't real funny. And I just remember just leaving there, not saying a word, and leaving there and just pedaling furiously home. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what do I do with that? And I never told my mother that. She died not knowing that story.
Because she would have went and twisted that boy in knots.
Yeah, she probably would have. And I didn't want her intervening.
Yeah.
And so many times today, I think we need to let... Well, here's what happened to me in the long run. In the long run, that fueled me. That really fueled me to achieve. I think it had something to do with how successful I was running in high school, because I wanted to be the guy that people looked at and said, this guy's somebody. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because at that point, I felt like he was telling me, you're nobody, right? Yeah. And it's funny because years later, a couple of years later, that same guy and his friends, they all wanted to be friends with me then when I became the popular guy who the people were talking about all the time. And I was like, no, thanks. I'll keep my geeky friends. I'm good.
Yeah.
It was a good, but that was one of those things that I remember that weighed heavy on my heart for a long time, but it drove me. And that's what you can do with a burden, is you can let it drive you rather than defeat you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's why, you know, you've heard me say on here before that hindsight's 20/20 and we got to look back every now and then. I mean, I look at three big things in my life. One, when I was younger and I was a bull rider, I got a pretty gnarly injury. Well, that led to me finding out I had cancer. And then later on, I got confronted and convicted that I had led a sport becoming an idol in my life, even though I wasn't that good at it. You don't have to be good at something for it to be an idol in your life.
Right.
Let me lay that out there. That turned into a ministry. And then most recently, my dad got cancer, and that brought him to the foot of the cross. That's why I named his eulogy, Cancer Saved His Life.
Yeah.
Even though it ultimately took it. And so if you never look back, you know, society says move forward, look forward, always look forward, drive, don't look back. You have to look back to see all those. Because we've talked about lampposts on here with God, you know, the streetlights. You know, sometimes the ones in front of you aren't lit up, but the ones behind you are shining bright, and you can see the path that he's brought you. And that's a good indication for the path in front of you.
Yeah.
I love that question, because we all have those burdens that become blessings, but you got to look back to see that.
For sure. Everyone brightens up a room, some by entering, others by leaving. Which one are you?
I hope I'm the first one.
Well, I hope so, and I hope so too. But you know what? I thought about this. My mind went in a whole different direction when I read this question. Because doesn't it depend on the room? For example, what do you think the Pharisees thought about Jesus when he entered the room and when he left the room? You know, they had the opposite feeling of what you and I would think, right? And I think that's I don't know why my brain went that way, but I think that we see a lot of times as Christians, we're afraid to be the person that isn't popular in the room, and so we keep our mouths closed. We don't share Jesus because we're afraid that somebody's going to look at us a certain way. You know, I've heard, especially kids have a really hard time a lot of times because they don't want their kids to think they're this crazy person, right? And so, and then, you know, when it goes to, I mean, we're in the political season right now, and so many Christians don't share because they don't want to be in controversial things. And so, and I think it's all because they're afraid of how they're going to be perceived in that room.
Yeah.
But it's just like Jesus. Jesus may have been looked at by some people as dimming the room, but he certainly lit that room up as bright as it could be lit.
I agree, but I think that's not the worst. I think, to your point, sometimes we go in and we go into a room and we stay quiet. The worst thing we do is we go into the room and we conform.
That's true too.
And that is really toxic. Many times you can say a lot without saying anything.
Yeah.
By abstaining from whatever that is or not blending in. You know, I do take exception with that, you know, preach the gospel and if necessary use words. I like that sentiment, but I think we have to use words. But that sentiment is true. You can make an impact without ever saying anything. People can know that you're different, but they never know what you stand for until you open your mouth.
Yeah.
But like I said, you hear that I don't even know what that's from. Francis of Assisi is who it's often contributed to, even though I don't think that's actually right. But we have to get past that sentiment of, well, I don't have to say anything. I just need to be good and act good. Yeah, that is great.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to take that a step further, and especially don't go the other way.
Yeah.
Don't go in and conform. That's the worst thing you can do. That's lukewarm. You know, God's got some pretty gnarly language for those who act like that.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's great to go in and stand on your ground, your morals, your faith, your beliefs, but we're called to share our faith, our morals, our beliefs.
Amen. What is your favorite tune to sing in the shower? Like I said, I don't sing much anymore, but funny thing that this comes up now. I haven't been to a concert in years, but this past weekend, Debbie's brother plays in a band, and they play mostly like classic rock type stuff. And we went and watched them at Red Wolf. They were at the Red Wolf Grill right down from our house. Yeah. We're like, well, we can't not go.
Yeah.
So we went down and we sat down there for 3 hours. I mean, they sang for 3 hours.
Really?
Yes. Some songs I haven't heard in 20 years.
Isn't that fun, that outdoor area that they've got in the really little stage? Is. They've done a great job.
Yes, they have. But it was funny because afterwards I was, you know, I went up to talk to the guys in the band, to meet the guys in the band and to talk to them. And I was talking with the singer and I said, or Debbie said, she goes, I don't know how you're going to be able to even talk tomorrow after all that singing. He's got one of those really wide ranging voices. And and he's like, well, we'll find out because in the morning I got to sing in church. So he was going to sing in church that next morning. And I just thought that. I don't know why I brought that up here, just because I guess it was singing. But, you know, I think I really look at that and I wonder, man, how can you sing for 3 hours? I don't see how you can do that. But then I realized, you know, people look at me and they go,
How do you run for three hours?
How can you run for 3 hours? And how can you run as fast as you do for 3 hours?
Yeah.
And how are you going to get up and run tomorrow after you ran 20 miles today? And it's like,
that's just
what you do.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
I think back at, I mean, the song I just sang out loud was just the other day. And I get either a startled face because the way you enter this song is very loud, or I get an eye roll from my wife. But Beulah Land.
Yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite songs, especially sung a cappella from people that know how to sing that song. And I think I know how to sing it, which is very loud when it starts. And so my wife will be driving down the road and I'll start it and she'll be like jumping. But for some reason, she just doesn't think I'm a good singer, Dean. I don't get it.
I don't understand. Yeah, yeah. Well, the bottom line is you should start the day off on a positive note, and singing in the shower is a very, very good way to do that. What I do is I have one of those little speakers stuck on my shower wall.
Yeah.
And I listen to the Bible in a year.
Yeah, you've talked about that before. That's a good idea.
While I'm in the shower. Mm. And so that's kind of does the same thing as singing in a little bit different way, but a positive note. It's a good way to get your day started in the shower. All right?
Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking. My mind just went to Elf.
In the shower.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Upward Sports Run for God Run Club is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness journey and your faith journey. You get these weekly podcasts, but there is so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there, too. If you're not a member, join today at runforgod.com. It is the best value you will find.
All right, we're back. I found this from a site called the Running Week, and this is Alex Roca, the runner with cerebral palsy who completed the Barcelona Marathon. So this guy has got, he's 32 years old, and on March the 19th of last year, this guy from Catalonia, Spain, ran the Barcelona Marathon in a time of 5:50:51, and according to Nike, completing a marathon, despite having, he has 76% cerebral palsy. I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
But it says that he's sponsored by Nike, which I think is pretty cool. And he's been doing this. He's run a number of half marathons, and I think it's at night. I can't remember how many. A bunch of half marathons. And this has been his goal, is to complete a marathon. And that's extremely difficult for somebody with cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got these exaggerated reflexes, and he's limited in his mobility. He's got all this muscle stiffness, which is just part of that disease. It took him 6 years of training to prepare for this moment. Can you imagine? So he completed the granulars. I'm not sure if that's how you say it. Half marathon with a time of 2:45. So he's run a 2:45 half marathon.
Wow.
As well. So it's really actually 2:38 is his best. In the Barcelona half marathon. He told the Spanish media outlet El Mundo that he wanted to send a message to the world. It's this. The only limit is yourself. And if you want to reach a goal, no matter what difficulties you face, with attitude, willpower, perseverance, and resilience, you can achieve whatever you set your mind to. And if you don't achieve it, you'll have given it your all, and you should feel proud.
Man, he nailed that.
Didn't he?
He's what I call an excuse stealer.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's kind of like, Scott Rigsby, that time I saw him.
Yeah.
You know, a guy with no legs running a triathlon. What's your excuse?
Yep.
Everybody listening, me, what's your excuse? We don't have one.
Yep, that's right. As he finished the final meters of the Barcelona Marathon, he said, "I made history." As he was finishing, that's pretty awesome. So, congratulations to him. That's sure. A neat. I love stories like this. I mean, and the truth is running and walking, it's for almost everybody. Mm-hmm. And so many people say, "I can't do it." You know, I got bad knees. There's all sorts of excuses on why people can't do it. Look at this guy.
You can do it.
All right, it's time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. What is failure? Maybe there's such a thing as micro failure and macro failure. But here's what I think. This one's called, Are We Failing? I was listening to Dave Ramsey this past week, and he made a joke that startled me a bit. He called himself an abject failure because he has been working so hard for 30 years to help people with their finances, and the situation has only gotten worse. Although he was wrong on the subject of the failure part, he is right on the state of our collective financial security. Of course, my brain then leapt to the thought that all the work we have done to persuade others to become healthier and adopt healthier choices is failing too. We have worked for nearly 15 years to get people off the couch, to get physically active, and yet the obesity rate in America is 42% by the latest data. Like Dave Ramsey, it is easy to call ourselves failures based on the numbers. I prefer to take a different tack, as I'm sure Dave does when he's being more honest and serious. If Dave had not changed the lives of millions of people his organization has helped, things would be even worse. That's the truth. And if the people who have been inspired and motivated to get off the couch by the things we have done over the past 15 years hadn't done their part, the health of our world would be incrementally worse. There's an old story that goes like this. A boy was walking along a beach after a storm that had washed thousands of starfish onto the beach. A man in the distance noticed that every once in a while, the boy would stoop down, pick something up, and throw it into the water. As the boy drew closer, the man realized that he was picking up starfish and throwing them back into the ocean. He stopped the boy as he approached and asked him what he was doing. The boy said, "All these starfish have washed up on the shore and they can't get back into the water. If they lay here until the sun comes back out this afternoon, they will all die." The man said, "There are thousands of starfish on this beach. I'm afraid you won't be able to make much of a difference." The boy stooped down, picked up another one, and threw it as far as he could into the ocean and said, "It made a difference to that one." So the question is, did that boy fail all the starfish he could not pick up and throw back into the ocean? Of course not. But he made a difference to the few that he could. And that's what we're called to do. Whether it's Dave Ramsey helping people to get out of debt, or an upward running coach getting one more person to take on the 5K challenge, or us sharing Jesus with that one person who really needs to hear it, we can make a difference. But we can't have the attitude of the man at the beach. We mustn't look at it as hopeless. I remember a lady who started running through a modified 5K challenge class I taught at my former employer. She may never have become a runner if she had not attended that class, but she is still running today as a result. We have a tendency to look at it, to look at that as, well, that's only one person. But that situation has been replicated thousands of times in the 5K challenge classes all over. It may not feel like we're having a big impact, but together, we are making a difference. All we can do is encourage and help others and let them take it from there. In a much more serious issue, I remember a man named James I worked with over 30 years ago who didn't know who Jesus was. We worked night shift together. I spent many hours talking with him about what Jesus had done in my life and what he could do in his life. To make a long story short, he credited me with sharing Jesus as the catalyst for him accepting Christ as his Lord and Savior. 10 years later, he was gone at a very young age. You never know how a little conversation here and there can impact someone's life. Isaiah 55:11 tells us that God's word never returns empty. And when we share his words with others, it can change a life. It's easy to think that there are so many people who need Jesus and our world is headed in the wrong direction at a fast pace, and what can I do to make a difference? In other words, does it really matter? Well, it mattered to James. Don't give up just because the big picture looks bleak. I don't focus on the other 30 people who are in that class who did not become runners. I focus on the one who did. I don't focus on the 100 people I've shared Jesus with who have not accepted him. I focus on the one who did. I also have no idea how many of those 30 people changed a lifestyle habit because of that class or came back to it later. And I don't know how many of those people who I have shared Jesus with have had their lives changed. I hope it's many. But even if James was the only one, that's a big deal. Don't minimize the impact of your encouragement to others. Chances are you're having a bigger impact than you know.
That's a great story, Dean. Yeah, I heard that podcast that you're talking about with Dave Ramsey. and, you know, the guy on the beach.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about that young man running that marathon was a excuse thief.
Mm-hmm.
People like that man on the beach, are hope stealers. Mm-hmm. And one thing that Dave Ramsey does often say, he probably said it in that podcast, but he refers to Proverbs 13:12, and it says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when desire comes, it is the tree of life." And that's the idea. It's two different ways of looking at the same situation. That little boy was looking at, I'm changing this one life. That man, James, at your work, you're talking to this one person. But we're in a society now that says there's no hope. You know, all the starfish are going to die. Well, no, they're not. This one doesn't have to.
That's right.
And
if we all did that, If we all did the one thing,
we could make a radical impact at that point.
Yeah,
It's the cumulative effect of it. But it's a great Dean's thoughts as usual.
The interesting thing about James is that I had no idea. I had worked with him down there in South Georgia, mm-hmm. and I had left mm-hmm. and moved to North Georgia. And the only reason why I knew this was that his wife told me at his funeral.
Wow.
And she said, you know, he always said that you were the one. And I'm like, you know, it was a powerful thing. And I don't say that to toot my own horn. I say that to say this. There's people out there who you have talked to in your life who you've had a positive impact on, and you don't even know it. If he had not died tragically, I never would have known that I had that impact on him.
And it's usually not the big things. It's usually not some, I don't know the situation with you and James, but it probably wasn't some profound talking to that you had with James. It was simply the small conversations, mm-hmm. how you lived your life, the things that you said. He saw Jesus in you. It was all those little things, but that's not how we want to share the gospel, right?
Yeah.
I've talked about this with the George story. We want a great oratory. I don't even know if that's the right word. We want a great presentation of the gospel. And those are effective.
Sure.
Pastors for hundreds of years, thousands of years, have Billy Graham could do that better than anybody. But that is not how God uses the majority of us.
Yep.
He uses the majority of us in ordinary, I say ordinary, society would say ordinary, mundane ways, like a conversation in the break room at a Shaw plant in South Georgia.
Yeah.
That's how he uses most of us, and we discount that by being the man on the beach saying, well, that's not going to do any good. Well, James is in heaven today.
Mm-hmm.
Because of something that the man on the beach said would do no good.
Yeah.
And it's the hope. And when you say there is no hope, it's not a place to live.
Yeah, yeah. I liken it to tug of war. You ever been in a tug of war before, you know, and you're pulling on that thing and you feel like you're doing no good.
Yeah.
Because you're pulling, and it's not moving. And you're like, why can't I get it to move? And you try to pull a little harder and it still doesn't move. And you're thinking, am I doing any good? But then what happens if you let go?
Mm-hmm.
Then you realize, oh, I was doing some good. And that's the way it is for a lot of us. A lot of times is we think all the things that we're doing, it's not doing any good. It doesn't feel like it's doing any good.
Sure.
But if you stop doing it, it would make the wrong change, and you don't want to do that. So, you know, I go back to Spider. You know, when Spider was here and he was talking about just change one thing.
Yeah,
just do one thing better, and you can have an impact on your health. And he's talking about yourself, but we can do that also in the way that we share Christ with others,
or
whether you're running or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what do we normally do when we say, okay, we're going to change our diet. What does the average person do? They completely quit eating this or that, or they go on this diet plan that is just not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Spider nails it. Just do one thing.
Change one thing this month.
And then change one thing next month.
Yep.
And before you know it, you've made a radical difference. But we want to be the guy on the beach that picks up all the starfish.
Yep.
And that's just not possible most times.
Yep.
And that's a great story.
Yeah.
As usual.
At Upward Sports and Run for God, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey. But we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. Sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you running and walking tips of the day and finish with a different encouraging quote in each episode. You must be a Run Club member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week, I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. And you know how they say it's just like riding a bicycle? And, you know, of course, they're talking about how you never forget how to ride a bike. Once you learn, you always remember. Well, you know, running's the same way. Mm-hmm. Once you learn how to run, and the thing is you learn to run or before you learn how to ride a bike. And so why don't people say it's just like running instead of it's just like riding a bicycle? I just don't, you know what I mean? It's
very thought-provoking.
Dude. Isn't it, though? But, and here's why. Here's why. This is my thoughts on why we don't say that. Because running, walking, they're just built right into us. Mm. It's just, it's so much a part of us. Mm-hmm. And riding a bike is something different. Mm-hmm. It's something we have to learn. It's almost like we don't even have to learn how to walk or run. It's just built right into us, right? So anyway, I just thought that was, running and walking is as natural as breathing and eating. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks ago, we had a world record for the women's marathon. And this week, it's the men's half marathon. Yomif Kajelcha from Ethiopia ran 57:30 for half marathon. These times are just getting crazy. That's just, I mean, it was only 1 second off of the world record, but just running a half marathon in under an hour period is just unbelievable. But he did it. He ran 4 5Ks and only one of them was over 13:40.
That's insane. That is nuts. So insane.
Meanwhile, the U.S. record is still high 59s. But do you know who the first American was in this race? Mm-mm. You know him. Morgan Pearson.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I did see that. I seen he posted that. Triathlete.
Yeah. Triathlete. He ran like 101.20 or 101.10, something like that. It was pretty good. Mm. Pretty good. So, for a triathlete to run that fast, that's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what it says about our runners.
The U.S. marathoners.
Yeah. But
of course, were the top U.S. guys in the race?
No, there weren't any big names there. Yeah. Oh, well, there was one. There actually was one, yeah, that was way ahead of him, and he caught him before the finish line. Hillary Bohr was in there. So he's a big name. He was actually going for the American record.
Yeah.
And he kind of blew up in the last 5K. He was on American record pace for more than half the race.
Really?
Yeah. So I credit to Hillary Bohr for going after it. I think we need to do more of that. Yeah. All right. Well, here's the crazy story of the day. New pill simulates the effects of running a 10K without lifting a finger.
That sounds so dumb.
This comes from Running Week. Researchers at Aarhus University developed Lake, a pill that mimics the health benefits of running without physical effort, published by the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. The drug is set for human trials. Imagine getting the benefits of a vigorous workout without breaking a sweat. A team of Danish researchers has created a groundbreaking pill that mirrors the effects of intense physical exercise without the need for any physical movement. According to their findings, published in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry, it delivers health benefits similar to running a long-distance race at a fast pace. Named Lake, that's capital L, small a, capital K, small e. For now, this drug has shown promising results in animal studies. It says, we created a compound that mimics the body's natural metabolic responses to both strenuous exercise and fasting, said Dr. Thomas Poulsen. Essentially, the molecule puts the body in a metabolic state similar to running 10 kilometers at a high speed on an empty stomach. Following intense exercise, the body enters a state of inflammation during which lactate and ketone levels rise. This process not only activates appetite-suppressing hormones, but also removes fatty acids from the blood, reducing the likelihood of serious health conditions like heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes. It also simulates the body's repair mechanisms. So this goes on to talk a little bit more about this, but the idea that you can take a pill to make your body think you ran a 5K, call me skeptical, to say the least. I am just amazed at the things that we are trying to fix with pills these days.
Everything.
This proves that it's everything, right? I just think this is the craziest. I mean, it's very interesting, right? I do think it's very interesting. I don't see how this is good for us at all, personally.
It's, It's not. Nothing replaces getting out and moving. I don't know. I can already see the commercial on TV.
Yeah.
As ridiculous as some of these other commercials that we're seeing nowadays. And the fact that we're the only nation outside of New Zealand that's allowed to put this stuff on TV.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. It is crazy. I don't
know. You find some humdinger articles,
don't you? I do, don't I? I'm pretty proud of myself sometimes. This one was interesting, and it's crazy. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in the long run. But I don't buy it at all. Our trivia question for this week. We've used this one before, but I like it so much that we're going to use it again. It's been a long time since we used this one, but here's the question. Why was the treadmill invented? Do you remember the answer to that?
I think I do, yeah.
Yeah? Well, if you know the answer to that.
Yeah, I do. I remember.
Send that to, send that to D, the letter D, Thompson at upward.org.
Ooh.
We changed the.
D Thompson at upward.org.
Yep. It's a little harder to remember than the old one, but dthompson at upward.org. If you can't remember that, you can, for now, send it to dean@runforgod.com, but that's going away. So dthompson at upward.org. And I invite anybody, if you got questions or something that I can help you with, send me an email. I am glad to help wherever I can. And our motivational thought of the week comes from Bart Yasso, the Runner's World editor, who the Yasso 800s is named after. He said this. He said, "Never limit where running can take you. I mean that geographically, spiritually, and of course, physically."
That's a good sentiment.
Isn't it? Bart Yasso's an interesting guy. I like his writing. All right. 242 episodes. We are so appreciative for you out there who listen to us faithfully. I just ran into somebody the other day who listens to us regularly, and he said, I feel like I see you all the time because I hear you and Mitchell talking all the time on the podcast. I said, I'm sorry. He said, oh, no. He said, I love it.
Yeah.
And so there are people out there who love it, and we're thankful for you.
I'm amazed. I was surprised I sent you the message. I figured by now people are tuning out. We're kind of winding the podcast down at this point. We've got maybe a minute to go.
Yeah.
And so I just, I assume that people turn up. But last week, if you remember, two weeks ago, I interrupted your outro.
That's right. The very last thing.
To give somebody a shout out.
Yep.
That person heard it.
Yes.
I was like, so people do listen all the way to the end.
Yes.
Crazy.
All right. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.